So welcome, Podcast Pearl Droid, episode 110. My name is Russell. Your name is Leon. How are you, sir?
Not too bad, Russ. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. It's Lee Collins news has got me down a little bit tonight, if I'm absolutely honest to you. So yeah. I thought I might dedicate the episode to him and his family and his fellow players at Yeovil. Watched him against Wrexham last year when they pumped Wrexham 3-0. I took my lad down. It was his first ever Wrexham away game. So we drove down to Hewish Park. Lovely little ground, nice little drive. He was... a very commanding, authoritative player. You could see why he was a captain. Put it that way, he was, a sort of like a natural sort of leader, quite vocal. But he could play a bit as well. And I don't know. You hear the news about these things all the often in the news, but sometimes they sometimes resonate a bit more. Sometimes depending on the circumstances, and the individual, and that one has this time. So yeah, awful news.
Yeah. Second that, just sort of remind me a little bit of just not long after I moved over here, Robert Enke, the German goalkeeper, stepped in front of a train, very sadly. He was a similar age, I think, to Lee Collins, early 30s. Yeah, I mean, he was sort of Germany's number one keeper at the time, and that was in a sort of build-up to the 2010 World Cup, I'm pretty sure, and he would have most likely been playing in that tournament. You know, he was at Barcelona for a while. He was at Hanover at the time. It just goes to show sort of these things. I mean, with Lee Collins, we have to wait and kind of see what comes out exactly. But it seems he's taken his own life. And yeah, no matter, even if you're successful and at that level, Lee Collins was, he's had a very good career. It can affect anyone, and you, if you need help, go out and get it.
Absolutely. I mean, the exact sort of circumstances leading up to it, but I think it's been ruled as a suicide, as you say, and so the exact sort of motive and circumstances might not necessarily be clear, certainly at the time we're recording now, and who knows, might never be, but on the assumption that it's something related to depression, then as you say, please... reach out, seek help, and it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah, no, that's a really important thing, Russ, actually, because I feel like that's a mistake that I made in my younger days, and saying, actually, I'm not okay has been helpful for me with some of the issues that I've had. So, it's a really important point.
No, it is, and likewise, it was... due to what was going on between my ears, I couldn't get to that Hungary game where we beat them. And I got as far as Canton. I was there on Cowbridge Road, had a nice meal. It was actually my birthday, but couldn't quite get to the stadium. It all sort of unravelled a little bit. So I don't know whether it was the excitement or the tension. Tension's going to be another word, I think, that crops up in relation to that Czech game. Yeah. But it can creep up on you when you least expect it. And what should have been a really, really happy day... it was one of the worst days of my life, but anyway, there we go. That's it's a downer we've started on, but I think it's a necessary one, and even if it helps somebody out there, then it's a worthwhile note on which to start. More happier topics is that we haven't come shooting out the blocks, have we, in this qualifying campaign? But we're not on the hard shoulder either. We're sort of middle of the road, which is where Neil Young always said was the most boring place to be, wasn't it? He used to like to pull into the ditch at the side of the road, wasn't it? That's what he used to say. But
we're like an 800 metre runner, sort of, who's sort of positioned himself nicely in the pack, on the final corner, something like that.
Steve Ovett, but not Seb Coe. Yeah. And even at a young age, I kind of knew that Ovett was the one to root for, but not Coe.
Yeah, yeah,
I couldn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know why. I put my finger on it. But even at a very young age, I knew that was the natural order.
Even before you knew that Coe was a fucking Tory,
absolutely. So we're in the pack, ready to pounce, and hopefully we do pounce. But it's, I suppose, in some respects, this is the thing, isn't it? It's still early days, but then they were certainly the Czech game felt like it was a group defining fixture. Yeah. And although the players, certainly Bale, for example, managed it very, very well in terms of the little press conferences and the contributions they made over Zoom to the journalists, it did feel, if you read between the lines closely enough, that they kind of got that as well. Because, of course, there's one fewer teams in our group, so it feels it's a bit more tauter than it might otherwise be. Certainly when you look at someone like England's group, for example. Mm-hmm. But looking back, I think it was a really, really good window. I mean, that was the headline issue of which, other than the points on the board and beating probably our rivals for second place, is that, you know, Rob Page has come out of it with, you know, his reputation enhanced that little bit further and absolutely in the box seat now, which is where I personally would have had him anyway. But I think as a general, more general consensus, absolutely in the box seat for taking us to the Euros, should it come to pass that's what he's asked and required to do.
Yeah, well, he hasn't really placed too many feet in the wrong place since he's taken over, really, has he? I mean, obviously there's sort of questions about, you know, how much of it is him and how much of an input Giggs is actually having from behind the scenes in terms of team selection and so on. But I've been impressed with Paige. I think he seems assured. He's made all the right noises. He's in game management, I think, has been good as well with some of the substitutions that he's made. And I mean, that's not down to Giggs, is it? It's not Giggs is calling him up and saying, you know, bring Kiefer Moore on now, is he? So, you know, it's credit to Paige big time, I think. I agree. I think it's been a good window for us. I mean, take it sort of step by step. Okay, we lost to Belgium, which was, you know, is the kind of the expected result. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not a betting man, so I don't know what the odds were, but I mean, Belgium would have been overwhelming favourites for that game, I imagine, and probably to win it by a couple of goals as well, which they did in the end. But there were still like positives to take from it, not least of which was an absolutely fantastic goal from Harry Wilson, but you know, that involved every outfield player touching the ball before Wilson stroked it into the net. And a good performance in the second half, I felt, you know, aside from the sort of sloppy piece of play which led to the penalty, I thought we were good.
I thought we just took the foot off the pedal a little bit in that sort of midpoint in the first half, which just allowed them to kind of gain in the ascendancy. But like you say, for the goal, I mean, it was like reminiscent of the Swansea Loner days and the Martinez himself. I mean, I'm sure he'd have probably been thrilled that his own team scored it, either his current team or his or his past team.
I'm trying to think, you know.
And we just let them.
It's like, is it sort of, go on. Sorry, it's just, you know, sort of Martinez, did he sort of plant that seed with his sort of Swansea Loner style? Bellamy talked about how Swansea were sort of a template for how Wales should play, and we sort of took quite a lot, I think, from their rise in terms of style of play and a more continental style. Yeah, so yeah, that's an interesting thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and being a bit more patient in the build up and not afraid to go back if something's not on. It's a bit more of a sort of like a deliberative form of football and approach to the game. It's not everyone's cup of tea, you know. I mean, if I can just about remember the days when we were going to games, of course. You always get some people to get a bit frustrated by that and want to kind of hump it up the field. But I think that's as much a reflection on, you know, the amount of football in the British Isles that they've been exposed to as anything, as any kind of sort of tactical kind of insight on their part or some sort of alternative tactical approach. But I suppose the moment you let a team like that begin to get a toehold, it becomes a foothold, and before that, it becomes a whatever the next hold is. And you know, they are clearly a quality side, even with a couple of players missing, such as Hazard. And then I felt we were sort of a little bit back to the wall on the back foot going in at half time. But that second half, I thought we were really, really good. And the biggest frustration for me, other than, you know, obviously sort of losing, I suppose, is I don't feel we made them work hard enough for the three goals. You know, if you lose, you know, 1-0 to, you know, a Wolde that is, well, you know, our goal, for example, if they'd scored that and we lose 1-0, you kind of take your hat off to them, you hold your hands up and you realise you've maybe just lost to the better team. But I don't think for any of their goals, we really made them work for those. And that's the frustration for me coming out of that game. So, yes, I agree with you in the sense that it wasn't an upset. It's probably what, you know, the bookies were expecting. it's what, you know, the form guide was perhaps expecting and so on. Not that we have a poor record in qualifiers or competitive games, far from it, but nevertheless, when you look at how they steamroll their groups usually, mm-hmm. not making them work harder is a frustration, I think, for me.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly, De Bruyne shouldn't have been allowed that much time to have a pop, considering, obviously, our players are aware of how good his shooting from long range is. Second one's a bit unfortunate in that it was a slip on a terrible pitch. You can't really put any blame at Conor Roberts' door for that. It was just a slip. It was an accident. And the third one was just it was Meppen, wasn't it? Just a bit clumsy, wasn't it? It was just a bit like a player who's not fully confident, not been playing a huge amount, which he hasn't been for his club, and you just kind of make those mistakes if you're not totally on top of your game when facing a side of that quality. You can't kind of make those sort of clumsy mistakes. But yeah, some sloppy play leading to their goals, but then followed that up with two clean sheets against quality teams. So you can say like things were sort of put right to an extent defensively.
Yeah, I think on the issue of the Conor Roberts one, I mean, I agree with you in terms of the slip. It was, you know, it was unfortunate. These things happen. Sadly, it was in our 6-yard box. Kevin De Bruyne, for example, he slipped a couple of times. So there was clearly an issue with the pitch, and it obviously wasn't the greatest. You could tell that from where, you know, from our perspective. The issue I've got with that particular goal is that you were playing three centre backs. Why is he picking up the guy at the back? All three of our centre backs got sort of dragged forward, going for basically the first run or the first man that they had in the box. It seemed to be a lack of communication, which meant that he's kind of scrambling Roberts. And the moment you're doing that, then you obviously you're liable to, you know, to slip, to fall, to pull the man, to bump the man, and so on. So that was really, really frustrating. Yeah, and I think Ward could have done a little bit better with the De Bruyne goal as well. And if you actually look a little bit before that, it's Bale, I think, that loses the ball. It's also Bale that basically is tracking back and then basically gives up. And that for me is avoidable, frankly. Now, you know, if De Bruyne still pulls out a quality shot and sneaks it in at the post and so on and so forth, top corners it or whatever, then again, to a certain extent, a bit like Nangolan's goal against us in the Euros, you know, no managers say that all goals are avoidable, but I suppose, as I said, if it's top draw, well, okay, you hold your hands up. But there was two or three instances where you go, well, actually, if this had happened and that had happened, they're avoidable. And I reckon Robert Page, who obviously was a centre-back himself, mm-hmm. he'd probably say that to them as well. But like you said, turned it round and two clean sheets is no mean feat against two quality opposition.
I didn't feel disheartened at the end of the Belgium game. I thought, you know, they were kind of, they had such good results against them in recent times. They were sort of due one, especially once Joe Allen went off as well. You think, oh, that's a really young, inexperienced central midfield there with Morel. I mean, and Ampadu, who both had fantastic starts to their Wales career, obviously, but they're not used to really playing against teams of that quality. Okay, Ampadu a bit more with the experience that he's had, but he's still only, what, 20? Morel, certainly not. And he's still struggling to get games at club level, even since his move to Luton. But, you know, second half it did all right. So, you just got to sometimes say they're a quality team, number one team in the world. And, okay, they won the game there at home. It was a game we expected to win. We didn't disgrace ourselves. And, we moved on from that. We're a completely different team and playing against Mexico, ranked ninth in the world. We've never beaten them before. That was a really, a really good performance, I think. And I think the performance is the thing you're looking for in friendly games. But the result to beat them for the first time, you know, is certainly worth a mention as well. Considering the team that was put out was, you could, if you're being a bit harsh, call it a B team against a quality Mexico team. You know, Mexico's a huge country. I think it's 126 million. I looked it up. You know, football crazy, and they've been on this unbeaten run for quite a while. Can't remember how many games it is exactly, but that's really noteworthy result, I think, even if it's just a friendly.
Yeah, I think as well, I mean, I don't know the circumstances behind the arrangement of that particular fixture, but they played Costa Rica a couple of days previously in Graz, it was certainly in Austria.
Probably,
anyway. And they've got their own sort of version of the sort of CONCACAF Nations Cup coming up. They have a semi-final against Costa Rica, actually. So, I mean, given they're a giant in that confederation, they don't necessarily need warm-up games to the same extent that we might, you know, in our Nations League. But I was slightly heartened, and again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, that ahead of some important fixtures for them, given that they could have picked perhaps several European nations, given that they're based over here, that they've agreed to a fixture with ourselves. I really enjoyed the game. I mean, the friendly we had against the USA, that again was a similar sort of similar fixture in you know, in between two competitive games, Nation Leagues games, obviously not qualifiers, but you know, there is a parallel there. It was really quite low key and a pretty poor quality game. This, on the other hand, had quite a bit of quality. I was quite impressed with the way they moved the ball around, but it was a bit of needle to it, which added a little bit of a competitive edge to it.
Yeah.
Just in that regard, I think, again, Reece Norrington-Davies continues to go up in my estimation every time I see him, because he's got a little bit of an edge to him, which I really quite like. He reminds me almost of a youngish Chris Gunter, actually, in the way that kind of sort of shop steward type, kind of factory floor sort really got a bit of time for that, without being kind of thuggish and boorish, just assertive. I quite like that.
Yeah, he's got a presence time as well, isn't he? He's like a physical presence.
Yeah.
I think I said it to you. He looks like he'd be a pretty handy rugby player.
We thought he could be a sort of like an inside centre, or maybe a like middleweight or something. You know, players like him, I suppose, they know in their heart of hearts they're only going to get one crack at a game in the window. They might get a substitute appearance, but in terms of starts, they're likely only to get, you know, the best they can hope for is maybe just one crack at it, and it's the friendly. So you're making all those wholesale changes. They've probably nevertheless travelled as well over to Belgium and back, etc., etc. There is clearly a real risk. Well, we know there's a risk because we've seen it a few times now, that you lack that little bit of fluidity and that rhythm that comes with, you know, the same players playing, you know, most of the games most of the time. But I thought they equipped themselves really, really well, and I reckon there was one or two performances there, or players putting in performances there, who, you know, really putting their hand up for starting spots. And I suppose the difficult thing is, of course, when we say starting spots, you know, what I mean is starting spots in games that are more or less, you know, the European Championships, and that's a big leap up, and that's a big ask, and it's a big leap of faith.
Well,
I think longer term, they're probably putting their hands up for probably the autumn to keep things fresh, to ensure there's not the sort of dip that we had after 2016. And I think that's quite heartening. I mean, if you saw some of the number of caps that some of those Mexicans have got as well. You know, these players, you know their way around a football field, and they've very, very streetwise team, and they, you know, we I think by and large went toe to toe with them. So that was quite heartening, because we've sometimes been bullied, haven't we? Let's be perfectly honest. Not so much in the recent past.
Yeah.
Been outwitted.
Yeah, I mean, but teams who sort of know how to play the officials and all that kind of stuff. And I think that was a good match to have ahead of the Czech Republic game, which was the important one, really, which was the most important of the three, was always going to be the big one. So the way it worked out, even though it wasn't sort of what Robert Page would have picked, because he said this when he did the podcast with Ellis James, he wouldn't have wanted a friendly in the middle of these two games. If it had been up to him, and the friendly would have been ahead of the two games. But the way it worked out, I think, to play a sort of tough, streetwise, physically imposing side ahead of the Czech Republic, you know, even though a lot of the same players weren't, a lot of the players were different, so because the team was very different that Page picked, still sort of good practice for us leading up to the big one. You know, we really had to tough it out, and we did, and got the result, which was the thing that made it a really good window. You know, that goal 8 minutes from time was the kind of the moment which turned the sort of okay window into a good one.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, it is interesting. It'd be interesting to know what the dynamic is within that squad environment, where I use the parallel in a pod, I can't forget which episode it was now, that parallel with the British and Irish Lions when they go on tour with the dirt trackers. So once the test team is more or less identified in the mind of the coach, you have the second string just basically fulfilling the fixtures, but it's important that they keep performing, knowing that they're highly unlikely to get a test spot, certainly a starting spot, but it's really important for morale. And I think there's something around the way these fixtures or these windows get arranged now with the friendly in the middle, invariably, unless it's the, you know, it's going to be, you know, presumably we're going to have a window coming up where we have three qualifiers, because I'm assuming somebody's always stepping down. So at some point we'll have three to play, which is a big ask on a squad. If you have that friendly in the middle, you have this concept of dirt trackers. And I think there's something in that, in that actually the players who know that they're unlikely to get a starting spot against Czech Republic, but they're going to be playing this friendly, meaningless friendly, there's a lot of people say, they've nonetheless got to put in a performance, got to put in a shift. And it's that sense that actually they're playing for the players who are in the stand, and their kind of sense of morale going into the next fixture that they're playing for, which I just think is a really, really interesting dynamic. And I don't for one second think necessarily that it gets talked in those sorts of ways, but I think there's something in that. I mean, I suppose the additional element in this window was, of course, that, you know, Chris Gunter's getting his 100 caps. And I thought it was lovely that, you know, not wishing to overshadow that for a moment, but Bale comes on for 10 minutes at the end, and I can't help but think, and I haven't seen any specific reference to that by him or of him, but I can't help but think that was basically him wanting to be on the pitch when his mate gets to the century.
Yeah, I think the commentator mentioned that as well. Okay, maybe because Bale and Gunter are good mates, maybe he wants to be on the pitch to sort of share the moment. And some lovely photographs of Bale, Gunter and Hennessy celebrating at the end of the game. Really good performance from Chris Gunter in his 100th cap, I've got to say, as well. Like playing centre-back, but sort of taking his role as captain very seriously, communicating with a lot of the young and inexperienced players around him expertly. And I think he's sort of more in the frame for the squad for the Euros now, having put in such a good performance against Mexico than he was before as well. Because, you know, he showed again, like he did against Belgium a few years back when we beat them in Cardiff, that he can play on the right of three centre-backs as well, and he can do that very well.
And as I mentioned with Ralph Davis in the last episode, and big shout out to Ralph for sparing his time to give us insight on the Czechs. Ralph lives out in Brno. Gunter's been playing centre-back for Charlton, I mean, albeit League One, but, you know, you do begin to wonder whether maybe that's the position a bit longer term, once he gets closer to his mid-30s. I mean, he's not old now, is he, let's be honest, but when he gets closer to his mid-30s, maybe that's where he can just eke out another season or two, maybe. But, no, I agree, and it was interesting, there was a lot of people, and I wouldn't have been against this necessarily, who were suggesting he would be worthy of a start on the right of three against the Czechs, because Mepa perhaps didn't have his best game, and, you know, hasn't for a while, actually, if we're honest, against Belgium. But I think you're probably right, and certainly in terms of the, in light of the news, was it yesterday or the day before, that Tom Lockyer's a doubt for the Euros. He's not been ruled out, but he's had an operation and he's out for the season in a club context, but that leaves it a little bit tight for the tournament itself.
I mean, I feel like with someone like Tom Lockyer, I mean, he's done really well for Wales so far, and he really contributed towards the end of the campaign with those clean sheets, and he was a regular player, you know, towards the end of the campaign when we qualified, so he sort of deserves his spot in that respect. But he's not so sort of established that he's someone who you would take in the way that we took Joe Ledley to the last Euros. Just going to be up to Paige, Giggs, whoever, to pick the squad, and they'll make sound judgments on this, but it just feels to me like that is really unlucky timing for Tom Lockyer, because I think they'll probably want to take people who've proved that they're fit, unless it's someone like a Joe Allen or an Aaron Ramsey who will go, you know, even if they're just standing on one leg, because they're established, whereas Tom Lockyer isn't so much. And in Mepham, in Lawrence, James Lawrence, who did really well against the Czechs, Gunter can play there, Cabango's emergence, Joe Roden obviously is some number one centre-back. We do have other options, so it's going to be a bit of a push for him to make the squad, I'd have thought, Tom Lockyer.
Did you say Tom Lawrence or Tom Lockyer?
Tom Lockyer, for Tom yeah. Lockyer to make the squad, yeah.
I think it might apply to Tom Lawrence as well, mine, but anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't think he'll make the squad. I think James Lawrence will.
Well, no, I mean, that's
I wouldn't have thought that before.
No, absolutely, and that's the interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, Ralph sort of referred to Ben Cabango in the last podcast and how he can be a bit slow in starting games, and you know, it's a rawness to him. You know, he's still really quite young. It takes him maybe 10, 20 minutes to grow into a game. But once he does, he's, you know, he's pretty imposing, pretty dominant, pretty comfortable. Yeah. And I thought he was great in the air against Mexico.
Yeah, me too.
But there was a couple of moments where people got past him and he really sort of settled into the game. Now, he's still young and I think he's going to be a really, really good player for us, no question. But I know people were praising the performance and I thought that was a little bit rose-tinted on my part, to be honest. Because we want them to do well, don't we, when these kids get thrown in, clearly.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But given that, you know, it was a really strange formation and selection that you went for, I thought basically being the only centre-back in the defence was actually a big ask of him. And under those circumstances, he did okay.
The 20-year-old. Yeah.
I don't think he was great.
No, well, I've got a confession. I missed the first sort of 20 minutes or so. So I missed the keeper. I've watched it back, obviously, later. So I didn't see the first 20 minutes against Mexico. So I saw the last 70 minutes and I thought he was great in terms of his positioning for headers and stuff. And he's, you know, his physicality and he sort of dominated in the air. But I'd heard that from you and others.
He grew into the game, yeah. I think, anyway, and you know, obviously other opinions are available. I mean, I thought for me, in terms of, you know, what you said about James Lawrence, I thought over the course of the whole window, I thought for me, he was more or less the standout player for us. Ward grew into the window, as it were, and Hennessy did okay against Mexico. But I thought Lawrence...
Ahead of Roden, really? I thought Roden...
I suppose in the sense that... But I don't. I'm no longer surprised by that. I suppose. Yeah. Okay. So that's what I need to qualify.
Yeah, it was
in terms of exceeding my expectations. Then, we've all set the bar really high for Roden. We're expecting an 8, 8.5 out of 10 performance out of him now every game. But Lawrence hasn't looked comfortable when he's played for us in defence in the past. Not quite sure what his best position is. But I think he's played more of his football at club level in midfield than he has in defence. But I thought he was really, really excellent. And certainly against the Czech Republic, I thought he was, I think specifically in that fixture, I thought he was our best defender and arguably probably our man of the match. I thought James did okay as well, but again, decision making a little bit frustrated on occasions. And I think he's really elbowed his way towards the fringes of that Euros squad.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that's helped him, obviously, is Ben Davis' injury, which was because Davis would have played left centre-back, as it were, for sure. And so, I mean, with James Lawrence, it was a bit, you know, when we heard about Davis's injury, it's like, oh, shit, that's a big one. Because it's quite an inexperienced defence we've got out there. If we're never going to pick Gunter for competitive games, which is unlikely because he's that bit back in the pecking order now. So James Lawrence coming in, it sort of I think it concerned us because we'd seen some of those poor performances from him in the past, and away to Hungary, he really didn't look up to it, did he? And we sort of wrote him off a bit after that, didn't we? I didn't think there was much chance of him making the squad. But, I mean, it was really interesting that after the Mexico game, Rob Page was asked about him because Lawrence was still in Germany and they weren't sure if he was going to be allowed to come or not. And they were really making appeals to UEFA and to FIFA and sort of really trying to get him into Wales so he could play in that Czech Republic game. And I thought it was interesting how much that was mentioned. They really wanted him to be there. So I wasn't surprised when he started the game against the Czech Republic because they worked so hard to get him over to Cardiff. And obviously it's the kind of the balance thing which was important in terms of having a left footer there playing three centre backs. But he really did well, didn't he? He just really stepped up. And to be fair, there's been I thought when he played against Slovakia in Cardiff and we won that game, which was, you know, another similar game to the Czech Republic game. It was tight, there wasn't much in it, and it was quite a physical game. I thought he did well then as well. So it's not like he's not shown any sort of form at all at international level before, but you know, he's put himself right up there, I think, for a place in the squad.
If you want consistency, don't you? That's the thing, isn't it? The odd performance here and there, the odd games.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you
of
want
course.
The consistency. I suppose arguably even in, you know, particularly in defence. I think as well, you know, the thing, you know, I said this before, I sound like a stuck record sometimes, or at least I fear I do, is that, you know, it's as much about combinations and partnerships as well. So I thought we did give leave a little bit too much space on the left, him and Nico Williams against Belgium. You look at, you know, Meunier was bombing forward, had acres of space on occasions. And if you look back, two of the goals kind of basically came from that, you know, from our left, their right. So I'm not saying he was perfect by any means. But playing alongside Nico Williams, who, you know, arguably speaking, is playing out of position on the left. Okay, maybe not. You know, he's played there in the past. He's played there for Liverpool and clearly a very, very talented player. But if you, you know, if you gave him a choice, he'd want to pick, you know, right back or right wing back, clearly. So there's a, you know, a new fledging combination there on the left. You know, he's playing alongside Roden, possibly for the first time. I've not checked it out, but he wouldn't have played there a lot with him in the past, in a four or a five or three, whatever you want to call it. And I just think some of those, when you add in those kind of elements as well, I think that was really, really encouraging. And I think, you know, it's a cliche, isn't it? But, it, you know, he's got the shirt now and it's his position to lose, really. But what a time to, you know, put a marker down when, you know, the next time a squad gets announced, it's for the tournament itself.
Exactly.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't go now, whereas before the window I probably wouldn't have picked him, which
is same.
And that's kind of remarkable that things can pivot so quickly for, you know, some players. And it's, you know, it's largely to do with maybe specific circumstances and just in that respect of how quickly things can pivot from probably not going to pretty much nailed on, I think now, is quite remarkable, really. Whether he starts in that opening fixture, you know, in Baku, I don't know, I'm not sure, but I don't know. It's more likely now, isn't it?
Well, it's a lot will depend on Ben Davis's fitness, really, won't it? I think if Davis is fit, he plays left centre back. We have options at left back, left wing back, in that Nico Williams can play there as well, and Reece Norrington Davis has really taken to international football as well. So if we're kind of naming a sort of first choice team, I think we're looking towards that sort of 5-2-3 system, with probably Nico Williams at left back and Ben Davis inside him. And Roden, obviously, sort of established himself. With the other centre back, I'm not quite sure, but probably Meppham is the one who's being favoured, and then and Conor Roberts on the right, Ampadu and Allen ahead of him, and then Ramsey Bale, Dan James, Kiefer Moore, and like a combination of attackers, Harry Wilson, David Brooks, depending on who's fit. I guess James Lawrence is the sort of backup to Ben Davis.
Yeah, I think I'd probably go with that as well. Although my one worry with playing three centre backs is that we just can sometimes end up dropping just too deep. It happens all the time. And I've seen people on Twitter just, you know, start putting, you know, Allen and Ramsey in the middle in order to carve out another attacking option up front. And, you know, anyone that puts Ramsey in a two in midfield just needs the head red, frankly.
Unless
they're 12 years old, and, you know, they're still kind of they don't have much of a memory of the last sort of 5 or 6 years. But what do you make, just quickly going back to the Belgium and the Mexico game, in respect of the choice between the sticks, him going for Ward over Hennessy for the qualifiers?
Surprised, and then I was surprised that after a bit of a dodgy game against Belgium, that Ward played against the Czech Republic, actually, because I thought Hennessy acquitted himself well against Mexico and he just looked very commanding, and Ward looked a little bit unsure of himself. And if Ward had been playing regularly, I would have totally understood it more, but he hasn't. He's been playing in the reserves at Leicester because they got Schmeichel there, so it didn't make a huge amount of sense to me. I guess, you know, just maybe just worries about Hennessy's fitness. He's only just come back and played one reserve game or something, so it was about easing him back. But if Hennessy's fit, I would go with him in the Euros itself, but I don't know what Page is thinking about that. Well, what did you make of it?
Yeah, similar, really. Similar. It was almost a toss of a coin option for the Czech game, the way it had gone. But like you said, if one of the reasons for picking Ward was a slight concern over Hennessy's fitness, then why would you risk him? Given it, if you think about it, you know, the way he picked up the injury was really fairly innocuous, just sort of chasing an errant back pass, I think, if memory serves. Mm. And I think it was the hamstring that goes. It's just that, well, you know, you've got Adam Davis. He hasn't had a huge amount of time. He's actually, you know, playing more regularly than the other two. So, you know, why not, you know, give him a cap in, you know, what was only, in inverted commas, a meaningless friendly. A term that I've actually, I don't think I've ever really used it. I may have used it once or twice, but I don't think I've ever used it a huge, you know, more than times than that. But as an aside, I've begun to have a real issue with it, particularly when people are kind of claiming that, you know, oh, how amazing that Chris Gunters gets to 100 caps when he made his debut in about as, in inverted commas, meaningless a friendly as you can get against New Zealand in May. It really bothers me, because when you look at that, for example, that fixture, that, you know, it's not a meaningless result, is it? So therefore, it's not a meaningless fixture. Anyway, I'm getting that off my chest.
Absolutely. I mean, I think
we're talking about goalkeepers, but I went up on a rant.
Certainly at the time as well, I think it was important that we played a lot of friendlies, which we did under Toshak, and we didn't, you know, later on under Coleman, which was probably sensible in terms of, you know, trying to move us up the rankings and stuff. But at the time under Toshak, I felt like it was good that the players got a chance to play together that bit more often and actually play some games. A lot of them weren't getting games at club level, so it was a good experience for them. So it wasn't meaningless at all for Chris Gunter. And I think Hennessy made his debut in that game as well, didn't he? And he's
absolutely
95
absolutely.
Caps now, 96, so he's not far behind.
And exactly.
I've seen some really good Wales friendlies, you know, really entertaining games, you know, like when we beat Norway 3-0, Kumas, you know, scored twice. It was fantastic. It was great.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
I agree. You know? I think some fixtures can take on more meaning retrospectively. Yeah. Friendly games now. I think that might be a certain conceit then, I suppose, on my part, that something at the time has less meaning and it acquires meaning when you look at, for example, that New Zealand game and, you know, almost 200 combined caps later. You've got two absolute stalwarts, central core to the Euro 2016 success, and so on. I think what's interesting is the way that things have become so convoluted with respect to qualification and how much of a sort of like a safety net or second chances you get now with things like playoffs, like Nations League places and the like. What's interesting is that on the opening weekend of our qualifying campaign, when I sort of said on Twitter, okay, what do we want the Belgium and Czech Republic game to be? You basically had, I mean, it was almost equal quarters. I want a Belgium win, I want a Czech win, I want a draw, and another quarter going, don't think it matters. And I just thought, well, since when has the opening weekend of a qualifying campaign for the World Cup, you know, the pinnacle of the international game, has there been almost, arguably, not so much meaningless friendlies, but meaningless competitive games thrown up because of the way in which both us and the Czechs have kind of pretty much got playoff places sorted, yada, 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 yada. And I think that's a really interesting thing that flips this whole argument on its head around friendlies are meaningless, only qualifiers matter, when suddenly we've now got games where it doesn't matter. We've always had dead rubbers at the end of a campaign, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. At the end of a campaign, yes, we get them. But at the start, how have we got to that stage?
Well, I think I would disagree with that analysis of, it doesn't matter. Because if you look at the way the fixtures pan out now, we don't play Belgium at home until the final game, do we? Yeah. And before that, we have four games against the Belarus and Estonia, who over the course of these, you know, this window have shown that they're not great teams, and I'm not sort of taking anything for granted when we play them. Certainly when we go away, and we've failed to beat Belarus away in the past, haven't we? But you know, they've taken some hammerings, and we've got to justifiably think that we're capable of taking maximum points off Belarus and Estonia, because the Czechs and the Belgians almost certainly will. And then we've got a game we get away to the Czech Republic, which will be really tough. But you could imagine this Wales team grinding out at least a draw. It's entirely feasible that we could do that. And then if we do get those results, you know, maximum points against Estonia and Belarus and grind out something, a draw or, you know, better still, a 1-0 win or something like that against the Czechs, then it all comes down to the last game against Belgium to top the group. Then we could go ahead of Belgium. So, you know, it's not impossible that we could end up in that situation where going to the last game in Cardiff, possibly with a crowd by that point in late autumn, we could be going into that game against a team we have an excellent record against in Cardiff, needing a win to go ahead of them to reach the World Cup. I mean, what an occasion that would be. So this sort of doesn't really matter analysis. We're not going to win the group anyway. I'm sort of slightly contradicting myself because I said after the Belgian game, no doubt Belgium will top this group. But now I'm not 100% convinced about that after they dropped points against the Czechs and the Czechs apparently had the best of that game.
They did.
So certainly not outside the realms of possibility that we can top this group. I'll say it now. I'll be confident and say, look, we're so good now at grinding out results. I think we could get something in the Czech Republic, and I think we could beat Belgium at home.
I suppose on a variation on this theme around meaningfulness of the qualifiers is that, you know, you look at England's group, and I almost feel it passes, don't get me wrong, but I almost feel sorry for England fans on occasions because there's nothing to get excited about in that group, is it? It's just a procession. And there's no drama, there's no sense of... I mean, if you think about that Czech Republic game for us, I'm struggling to remember a more tense game. I mean, possibly one of the Belgium qualifiers in the past, or certainly, you know, at the Euros, don't get me wrong. But, you know, in terms of qualifying games, certainly the Nations League doesn't really generate that level of tension. I don't suppose you really got it against the Hungary game. Like I said, my head wasn't in the right place that day, so I don't really know, but... There was a sense of celebration about that occasion, yeah. Wasn't it?
I mean, I wrote a piece about as at the Euros, and I just said that, you know, that evening wasn't really tense. We were just so sort of assured. I felt. I mean, Hennessy made an excellent double save in the first half, so that's worth mentioning. But there was just this sort of calmness about it, wasn't there? There was this assurance that we're the better team, we're going to get the result. So it wasn't so tense. I didn't think that Hungary game. In terms of tension, it reminded me of some of those qualifiers for the Euros, home to Bosnia, home to Belgium, that kind of level of away to Belgium as well, that kind of level of.
But even with the Belgium one, we scored relatively early, which helps with the tension, doesn't it? Yeah, Bosnia at home would be a good shout. But yeah, no, there was a sense of frustration, tension born out of frustration, so much as the sense of potential danger in the Israel home qualifier, if you remember, because they just parked the bus, if you remember.
But that was
different. A long, long time since I felt quite as tense as that game. And then obviously the littlest man to score ahead of since, possibly Brian Flynn. Have we managed to verify this? Flynn scored against Brazil, didn't he? In 83, is it?
Was, yeah. I'm just thinking that Mark Pembridge got a few, but I can't remember
any headers. Yeah, I don't think there's
head them. 40-yarder against the Ukraine in Kiev.
Yeah, the daisy cutter.
Yeah, good goal against Ireland from a Neville Southall assist? All his goals were away from home, is that right?
They were. Yeah. Terrific quiz question, that. All six of them, I think.
But I can't remember any headers. No, Bellamy scored a header. It was a couple of headers actually. He's not the biggest.
Oh, he got the one against Denmark, didn't he? Of course, yeah.
Argentina as well.
But I think even Bellamy's got an inch or two on Dan James, surely. And I'm not counting Earnshaw's header in inverted commas against Scotland, because that came off his shoulder and his arse and his heel, I think, on the way in from memory. So I'm very picky on these things, but either way, I do remember, and it was interesting. Do you remember the, hang on, which goal was it now? Oh, crikey. There's a goal that he sets up for Kiefer Moore, I think, and Bale just like lumps this kind of ball across the field, and I can remember as Bale does it, I'm kind of going, why are you lumping it to the shortest man in the air, to the shortest man on the fucking pitch?
Yeah.
But he kind of wins the header and he whips in the cross, and then Moore scores. Which fixture is that?
My mind's gone blank. Is that Finland?
Yeah, is it?
To anyway, go 3-1 up.
People listening to this will think of it. It was away from home. It was one of those games. I should have prepared this a bit better. Anyway, so basically, like hammering Bale for lumping up to the little guy, who then like comes up trumps and sets up the winning goal, or sets up a goal. Exactly the same thing where the throw, Moore comes short to take the throw, and I'm thinking, what the hell are you doing there? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On the touchline, just outside the area. Shouldn't you be in the effing box? And about 12 seconds later, the person who should be on the end of those crosses, burying them with his head, is the little guy. So, what do I know? But, the tension, the relief.
What a fantastic goal. I'm going to say credit to Kiefer Moore as well, because if you watched it back, it's really noticeable how three Czech defenders sort of go towards him to sort of try and box him in. And he manages, he's confident keeping the ball with surrounded by defenders and gets it back to Bale with a good little pass, which is not the easiest pass in the world. And then Bale has the ball in space because the three defenders have gone to Kiefer Moore. And then I'm thinking, okay, Bale's got space, he can put in a cross here. But like you, I'm thinking, like, there's no one to cross it to because Moore's just given it to him on the left-hand side. So when he's shaped to shoot, he does that little kind of shift, doesn't he? We talked about this before, where he's going to do it.
Yeah.
The defender knows he's going to do it, but he just does it so quickly that there's nothing anyone can do about it. And he just shapes this cross. It's just beautiful, the way he shapes it. And
that's the key for me. It's not the pace at which he does that little shift. Yeah. It's the shape on the cross. He gets his, and it's not just his foot, it's his leg, it's his hip, it's everything. He manages to get his foot around him. And the goal against Hungary, the Ramsey header, the Kiefer Moore header, is a joke that was lost to me for a couple of days because I didn't get to that game. But anyway, at the time, but anyway, he actually pushes it, he nudges it even further than he does against the Czech Republic. And again, just manages to kind of wrap his...
the whip on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And similar but different against the Czechs. And probably 8 times out of 10, the centre-half heads that away. But on this occasion, James just kind of times the run perfectly. And that's going to be an important goal. I mean, however it pans out, whether it's the scenario you've painted potentially, or whether maybe it's Gaz a little bit sort of less optimistic, however it pans out, we just settle for the playoff, whatever. I think that goal is going to prove to be really, really quite important. And you could just tell they were really deflated by that. Because as Ralph said, they were confident coming here. To give him a little bit of a bloody nose is terrific. And then, of course, talking to Bale, he then goes and... it's a really fair play, top quality shithousery. Goes and puts an elbow on the bonce of of Kubala, or Kabala, sorry. And
he had a little look, didn't he, before?
He did, which for me, I think I don't want to incriminate him, but I think was more than accidental and more than coincidental that he was the recipient. Yeah. So, fair play.
Yeah, I just want to say as well for Dan James, it's not just the timing of the run. He really kept his eye on the ball, considering that the big centre-half is right in front of him, jumps for it, misses it.
Mm.
And that can be quite off-putting, I find, when I'm playing. And, but he kept his eye on it perfectly and planted it down. And just when the ball bounces before the keeper like that, it's really awkward. It was a great header. So fair play to Dan James. I didn't know he had headers in his locker. I hadn't seen him score with a header before. Maybe he's got one or two. But
for me on the night, redeemed himself slightly because I felt some of his decision making was a little bit off. On occasions, gave it when he should have gone, and went when he should have given it. But you know, he's still young. He has had a difficult season, hasn't he? So, you know, it'd be unfair to dig him out too much. But yeah, it's kind of all forgotten when he pops up with the winner like that. So yeah. Anything else you want to say about it? Because it's late for me, so it must be even later for you.
Yeah.
I'm just mindful we perhaps should wrap this up.
No. Well, I think we have to mention the Joe Roden block, don't we? In 92nd minute, I mean, saying the goal was a huge moment. What about that block potentially being a huge moment as well? And you could, and talking about checks being deflated as well, the amount of Czech players who are in and around the box with their hands in their heads after that flew over the bar of the player, sort of smashed it, kind of thinking that was in. That completely deflated them, and like Ralph said, they were confident. They'd just had the best of that draw against Belgium, and they'd hammered the Estonians 6-2, and they've been on quite a long unbeaten run, and they fancied taking some points from us. So it's a really, really good result that, and we're right in this, and. Yeah, hopefully we can qualify for a World Cup.
And it's a result that would have a bearing on the Euro should our paths cross the Czechs as well in the summer. Just puts that little sort of seed of doubt in their minds. Well, not doubt as such, but you know what I mean, that sense that, okay, they've done us once, so they could do it again. Even though, you know, they competed well. I mean, maybe on another night, a 0-0 draw, 1-1 draw, you know, wouldn't have been an unfair result.
No, it's an interesting thing for me because I think in the not too distant past, you know, these kind of quite even games tended to always go against us, and you know, there'd just be a moment where the opposition would just sort of produce a moment of quality, or we'd switch off for a moment or two, and we just didn't seem able to sort of tough it out in these kind of high quality games against decent opposition who were kind of quite physically imposing. We can do it now. We can compete, and it's a massive change in mindset, I think, with it, where we're always in these games, and you know, even if we're sort of lagging a bit behind and the opposition team have got more possession or whatever, but we're still in there, and we're still, you know, even that Bale chance from the Nico Williams cross sort of came out of, you know, nowhere really, because they'd been sort of quite dominant in the period leading up to it. I mean, it just, we've got the quality of player who can deliver those balls in, who can create these chances. We're a competitive team, and I'm just really enjoying that, watching us sort of go toe to toe with these sort of big footballing nations now, because we didn't used to do it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely, absolutely right. Long may it continue. It's a nice change. Yep. Shall we leave it there? Not too sure what we've got next lined up. I think we're going to sort out this Patreon at some point. I'll just leave that there. Just leave that dangling. Mm-hmm. And not too far off, the squad for the Euro has been announced. I think the next fixture is Albania at home on the 6th, I think, 5th or 6th of 5th.
Just ahead of the tournament.
Yeah. Probably squeeze another one in. We had two in the run-up. No, we had three, didn't we, in the run-up to the last Euros, wasn't it? It was Northern Ireland, Ukraine and Sweden, wasn't it? So one feels a little bit light on the ground, so I think there's probably likely to be another one. There's plenty to talk about. There's always stuff. We can always find stuff to talk about, can't we?
Yeah, well, I think we should do another music one with Dave, if you can get Dave Owens, if we can get him involved as well, because that was fun to do ahead of the
feels like
the
a lifetime ago. Yes, so Dave, if you're listening, yeah. I know you do. Just putting the call out, we'll curate another Euros theme playlist. The canvas is so broad, given how many cities are involved and countries are involved, and and all the rest of it. Not that I'm hugely up on Azerbaijani music. Yeah. But that's where Dave comes in, of course, isn't it? Of course.
Yeah,
don't need to worry. Dave's got that base covered. Okay, well, cheers, fella. Look after yourselves and, look after yourself. Yep. And to listeners, look after yourselves. And as I said, dedicate to Lee Collins. And please, if you are listening to this and struggling, just reach out. Just send someone a text. Professional help out there, but there's just that reaching out to somebody can make all the difference. So don't suffer in silence. It's okay not to be okay.